Will Turkey ratify Sweden's NATO membership? Stockholm says it can't fulfill all Ankara's demands. As the bloc's membership requires unanimous approval, what would make Turkey change its mind? And what does all of this mean for NATO's future? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. One of the many fallouts of Russia's invasion of Ukraine has been that previously neutral Nordic countries are seeking to join the NATO military alliance. Sweden and Finland applied in May last year, within months of Russia launching its so-called special military operation. All NATO members need to ratify any accession requests, and Hungary and Turkey are the only two that have failed to do so. Ankara accuses Stockholm and Helsinki of harboring members of Kurdish group the PKK, which it considers a terrorist organization. Turkey is one of the oldest members of NATO and has the second largest army in the alliance. Both Sweden and NATO say that all parties have had their say and it's time to close the deal.
Turkey confirms that we've done what we said we would do, but it also says it wants things that we cannot or do not want to give them. Now the decision is with Turkey.
Finland and Sweden have delivered on that agreement and also committed clearly to have a long-term cooperation with Turkey on these issues. So therefore, the time has come to finalize the accession process and to ratify the accession protocol.
If Sweden joins NATO, it would end a long-established military non-alignment policy. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization is the world's biggest military alliance. It was founded in 1949 to counter the Soviet Union during the Cold War. Over the years, it has expanded, growing from 17 member countries in 1990 to the current 30. NATO pools resources from its members, including battleships, warplanes, a range of heavy weapons, and more than 3 million personnel. The alliance aims to guarantee the freedom and security of member countries through political and military means. All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests from Istanbul, Tarık Oguzlu, a professor of international relations at Istanbul Aydın University. In Brussels, Teresa Fallon is the founder and director of the Center for Russia-Europe-Asia Studies. And in Moscow, we have Pavel Felgenhauer, a defense and military analyst. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Teresa, let me start with you today. So Sweden is saying that Turkey is asking too much and that it can't fulfill all of their demands. Where does that leave things, and how ultimately does this get solved?
Hello, thank you for having me. I just want to clarify that anything I say is my personal opinion and doesn't reflect any of the organizations I've been affiliated with. I think that it's very key. We've seen, even preparing for today's meeting, 6 months ago, everyone was thinking that things had been settled, and as the planes landed in Sweden and Finland, they received messages that the Turkish government had changed their mind and that they weren't, after the NATO summit, they weren't happy with the agreement. So I think we've seen a new Swedish government. They've followed up with the same views as the previous government. The Swedes have actually changed their laws in order to help facilitate some of the requests that Turkey has made. But it seems that Turkey is never going to be quite happy unless they extradite about 35 people. And some of these are actually now Swedish citizens, because about one-tenth of the population, Sweden took in a lot of Kurdish refugees. So some of these people have worked their way up in Swedish society. One is now a member of parliament, and they will not extradite these people to Turkey. So this is a really strong sticking point. And a lot of these issues really aren't really just about Sweden and Finland. It's also giving Erdogan more leverage over NATO, and it also plays well to his domestic audience. He seems very powerful, and it seemed most countries in NATO were willing to kind of let this play out. But we saw yesterday with Jens Stoltenberg's comments that, you know, people are starting to lose patience with how long this is running. So there are three possible scenarios. One, that it will happen quickly after Hungary, perhaps. The second one is kind of a more moderate. Maybe Erdogan will see what he can get, you know, what he can this tough transaction, this tough negotiation position, see what he can get. He wants to get F-15s from the United States. I'm sorry, F-16s from the United States. And that might be difficult in this current Congress. And the third thing is NATO. They don't feel that they're getting enough support for their own security interests in regard to Syria. So the U.S. and Turkey are on different sides on those issues. So I think that Erdogan has a lot of demands, and he is not just unhappy now. He's been unhappy for quite some time. We've seen this happen with the previous Secretary General of NATO. He kind of blocked that back in 2009. He wanted to buy a Chinese air defense system. NATO didn't want that to happen. Mm-hmm. So instead, he bought the S-400 from Russia. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where the U.S.-Turkey situation kind of erupted in regard to the F-35s. Turkey was no longer allowed into that buying of the F-35s. So now they're asking for the F-16s. So there are a lot of multiple strands in this relationship. And Sweden is almost one of the symptoms of it. Mm-hmm. But I think Turkey is showing that they really hold all the cards right now.
Tarek, from your vantage point, will Turkey ultimately ratify Sweden's NATO membership? And what's it going to take to get to that point?
Actually, it is extremely difficult to say that Turkey will for sure recognize the admission of Finland and Sweden to NATO, because we all know that, looking from an historical perspective, NATO members have brought their national issues to the platform of the alliance whenever any particular topic came to the agenda. We had seen in the past many examples showing that member states try to score leverages, try to score points with other countries through their influential position within the alliance. For example, we know that the United States wanted to make sure that Georgia and Ukraine become members of NATO in 2008, but France and Germany vetoed this process. In the past, we had seen that Greece, for example, very much vetoed the membership of Republic of Macedonia. We also know that Greece and Greek Cypriot administrations have been using their membership inside the European Union to score some geopolitical goals vis-a-vis Turkey. So these kind of things are quite normal with the multinational platforms. We have to underline it very clearly. Secondly, when coming to your question, now Turkey is in the middle of a kind of political election season, and Turkish nationalism has been on the rise for some time, and Erdogan and his partner, Nationalistic Action Party, have made it very quite clear that unless Sweden and Finland complies with the terms of Turkish government, Turkey will never ratify the term of the accession agreement. And before the elections take place, most likely in late April or early May, I don't expect that Turkish parliament will ratify the membership claims of these two countries within NATO. But there is also another reason that seems to have quite facilitated such kind of a role on the part of Turkey, because the international system has now been shifted to a multipolar environment. So long as we live in a multipolar environment, number one. Number two, so long as the war in Ukraine is a kind of war of attrition between Russia and Ukraine, Turkey's leverages within NATO, Turkey's maneuvering projections within NATO seem to have been quite tolerated by the alliance. Mm-hmm. So I think this situation will continue for some time.
Pavel, Russia has said that it's going to beef up its military presence in the northwestern parts of the country in response to Sweden and Finland's bids to join NATO. Clearly, that is not a surprise to hear that rhetoric. We've heard a lot of rhetoric from Russia when it comes to the attempts by Sweden and Finland to join NATO. But how concerned is Russia at this point that this membership bid would be successful? How worried are they about the prospect of Sweden and Finland joining NATO?
Well, of course, that's seen as a serious problem. Sweden and especially Finland were seen for a long time that their NATO membership was basically almost impossible. And of course, during the Cold War, Finland was basically a Russian, well, protectorate. There was this term of Finlandization, kind of a capitalist country, but politically it was associated with the Soviet Union, was buying Soviet weaponry, and was kind of putting its foreign policy was in kind of, well, coordinated from Moscow. And so for them to become an enemy nation, that's very serious. Of course, for the Russian military, maybe it's not that bad. There will be new divisions formed in the Baltic region. New army divisions means more positions for tank generals to occupy, more money to go into the defense budget. Any kind of military likes an enemy, especially an enemy that's not attacking you. In Finland, Moscow is not really poised to attack Russia, but you can figure that this is a threat, and that means you can use that to get more money in your budget. But Russia right now maybe is a bit, I would say, pleased that Turkey and Hungary are holding out and not allowing the formal accession of Finland and Sweden into the alliance. Though, of course, for all practical reasons, they are already in. And the United States made clear that they will treat any kind of a threat to Finland and Sweden as if they are already NATO members. So the leverage that Turkey has is important, but it's not absolute. And it's understood in Moscow that eventually Turkey and Hungary are going to cave in.
Teresa, what does all this mean for NATO's future, especially as the war in Ukraine continues?
That could be a wild card. I just want to pick up on one point there. We should recall that prior to making this public, both Sweden and Finland canvassed all NATO members whether they would support them to become members of NATO. So they wouldn't just kind of put themselves out to dry like that. So they canvassed everybody. And from what I've been told, Turkey did support their bid. And so it came as a bit of a shock once they made the announcement public that Turkey had other requirements for them in order to become a member. So that really is put Sweden and Finland in a very difficult situation. There's a war going on in Europe. Sweden and Finland are traditionally neutral countries, and they really kind of stuck their neck out by saying they want to become a member of NATO when it was unclear that they might be blocked by Turkey. So I think that there is some kind of resentment about that as well, because saying that you support them and not supporting them all the way through, using leverage to get what you want out of them, is kind of being seen in a negative light by some people. So the important thing was at the NATO summit back in Spain, everyone was saying, you know, we have a rejuvenated NATO with possible two member states instead of being brain dead, as Macron had announced a few years ago. NATO was, you know, got its mojo back, had a reason, you know, kind of they all pulled together. And it was a very, you know, positive narrative. But in the background, as these planes were leaving, Turkey was already kind of formulating their position on how to maximize their leverage to get what they want out of other NATO member states. And in addition, we see even increased tensions now in the Aegean between Turkey and Greece. So there's a lot of, you know, it's nice on the facade, but underneath there's a lot of bubbling problems. And Turkey actually plays quite an interesting role. We see them export drones to Ukraine, and they're also getting financial support from Russia. So it's a very complex relationship that they have.
So, Teresa, if I could just pick up on one of the points you were making, you said that in the run-up to the announcement that there was canvassing internally that was going on within NATO member states as far as how all this would play out. Then you have this three-way agreement that Sweden and Finland signed with Turkey in 2022 aimed at overcoming Ankara's objections to their membership of NATO. Would NATO members have anticipated that this would not have been resolved yet? And just how frustrated are they getting with all of this?
Well, that's a really good question. It seems that the parameters are constantly changing. Some people have complained that a lot of the disagreements are a bit ambiguous. So it seems like the goalposts are constantly being changed. And, you know, Sweden is a democracy. They have certain protections for their citizens. They can't just send people off to Turkey, even though they're Swedish citizens. So there's kind of a clash here in regard to some values. And I understand, you know, for Erdogan, it's good to have a maximalist position, ask for as much as you can get and see what you can find. And I mean, even at the same time, we're seeing Turkey refusing to extradite Uyghur citizens to China. So, you know, there are various feelings and implications of this. And because Sweden is a democracy. The problem really isn't so much with Finland. The tensions are between Turkey and Sweden because of the large Kurdish population there. So there's a lot more to this than just Sweden. And we, you know, the fact that Sweden has removed their arms embargo that was put in place after Turkey went into Syria. So Sweden was not a member of NATO. They put an arms embargo on them, and they have lifted that now, and they have said that they will cooperate more in defense cooperation. So I think that that would be a positive. So there has to be some negotiation here. There has to be some give and take. As we all know, you know, everything is a negotiation. And I think holding on to this maximalist position, I think there was a clear message yesterday sent by Jens Stoltenberg that patience is beginning to wear thin. But Turkey, you know, this is also playing very well to the domestic audience. And they have 80% inflation in Turkey. He has to kind of show that I'm a big power on the world stage. And it remains to be seen. If something, also to pick up on your earlier question, you know, if something happens in Ukraine or if this war expands, God forbid, but I mean, there are a lot of black swans out there that, you know, by letting this go on for so long, it's kind of like a win for Putin. And I think people are concerned about that part of the optics of this whole situation, because it looks like NATO is not together, that it's kind of a long horse trading situation, and that's never good. So I think that everyone would originally thought, let this just play out. It's between Turkey and Sweden and Finland, and now there might be some calls for other countries to get more involved. But I think first they're sending signals, and we'll see if that will have any effect. I don't think it will, but it remains to be seen.
Tariq, this stance that Turkey is taking, how big a risk is this for President Erdogan when it comes to Turkey's relationship with other NATO member states? And is there any concern in Turkey that President Erdogan is perhaps at risk of overplaying his hand?
Actually, let me approach this question from a hypothetical perspective. If we had another government here in Turkey, I expect the Turkish government would have reacted the same manner, in the same way, because this is an issue that very much concerns Turkish national security interests. Turkey is quite upset with the position of its partners within the Western international community concerning the developments in the agency, concerning developments in Syria, concerning Turkey's national security sensitivities. If we had another government, I expect most likely Turkish reaction would be the same. Second of all, there are strong disagreements within NATO concerning the right approach to be adopted against Russia as well. So we should not assume that all NATO members are on the same page concerning each and every action Russian government has been taking, concerning each and every action that very much relates to NATO's security interests. For example, there is a strong disagreement between the countries in Central and Eastern Europe on the one hand, and Germany and France on the other hand. Some people are quite eager to see that there is soon a kind of peace agreement with Russia, but some others think that the war should continue to the end because Russia should be punished to most extreme. So if we approach this particular problem from this particular perspective, we could easily understand why Turkey has been so keen on its national security considerations. And I think that the cost to Turkish government will not be so high in Turkish politics, because Turkish people, to a significant extent, seem to be quite happy with the position adopted by the current Turkish government. So they see this particular development as a core national interest, because the majority of Turkish people are of the view that the people who took refuge in Sweden back in the past were in close cooperation with the PKK in Turkey and in northern Syria. And many people who had taken a part in this coup attempt in July 2016 had taken refuge in Sweden. So looking to this issue from the security considerations of the Turkish government and the people alike, you could easily understand why Turkish government has been so keen on this issue. And we should also underline another point. If one country is very keen on its national security interests, whereas the other members are simply ignoring those demands, so we can jump to the conclusion that there is a strong degree of disagreement, there is a strong degree of lack of trust among the allies. And we should not forget the fact that Turkey has not been on good terms with the leading member of NATO, the United States, for some time. These two countries are at odds with each other concerning each and every issue, in particular the Eastern Mediterranean, Asian, Northern, Africa, Greater Middle Eastern region. So this is a kind of continuation of this Turkish-American lack of cooperation.
Pavel, did Russia actually anticipate that Sweden and Finland would actually try and join NATO as a result of the war in Ukraine? And also, where has all this left Russia's relationship with Turkey?
Well, there has been talk in Finland and in Sweden of joining NATO for a long time. The Danes and the Norwegians that aren't members of NATO, they were pressing that ahead because the Scandinavian countries tend to do everything together in a bloc, and that they are divided with two big nations inside NATO, two nations outside NATO. But the majority of people in Sweden and Finland was against NATO membership up to last year and the beginning of this war, when there was a watershed change in public and political opinion. I mean, I discussed this in Helsinki and in Sweden in the 90s, and everyone was saying, oh, that's a kind of an extreme possibility. No, we're not. Now they are. And that was actually not fully foreseen in Moscow. Maybe there were some specialists who understood that this could happen. But in the kind of decision-making bodies in the Kremlin, apparently they didn't. And that was a nasty surprise, because actually building defenses when you have Finland, especially Finland, as a NATO member would be not good. Though, of course, in the last some years already, beginning from, I think, at least 2007-2008, Finland and Sweden were very closely, their military were cooperating with NATO, taking part in joint military exercises, deploying forces together, and in NATO headquarters, you were all the time bumping into Swedish and Finnish military. You could recognize them by their uniforms. So this is not just simply came out of the blue. Russia hopes that maybe this will be, as I said, that the Turkish kind of veto will hold for some time. But Turkey is so dependent on Europe, especially on the United States, and they can do Turkey so much harm, actually, by just simply not providing aid and technologies. It's understood that this Turkish veto is going to evaporate rather sooner
Pavel,
than later.
I'm sorry to bother you. Pavel, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just do, we are running out of time. I just want to ask Tarek one last question here. Tarek, we only have about a minute and a half left. If Turkey ultimately approves Sweden's bid, does that mean that they will also approve Finland's bid?
Of course. Actually, as far as Finland's membership is concerned, there is no Turkish objection to this, because the problems between Turkey and Finland are much easier to solve in comparison to the dispute between Sweden and Finland. But we also know that Finland has made it very quite clear that if the problem with Sweden were not resolved, they will not join the alliance alone. So they will join the alliance together. So this concerns the three parties. But let me also tell you something which very much concerns the main reason why Turkey has been acting this way. Because Turkish authorities are of the view that we are in the middle of a kind of geopolitical confrontation between the leading powers of the globe, and the Western countries do not have the luxury of ignoring Turkey's claims and considerations, because this is a kind of Second World War, a Second Cold War environment. And Turkey is a too big and too powerful country to be lost to the other side. So Turkish authorities speak through this realpolitik and geopolitik language.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Tarek Oguzlu, Teresa Fallon, and Pavel Felgenhauer. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.